Sun's Week in All. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Greetings and salutations, my most excellent friends. It's Miller time here on this Friday, June 14th. I'm Steve Miller in Washington, in for Sonny Young, and this is the Sunny Side of Sports. Now, we're kicking things off today with a recap of the 2019 FIFA Women's World Cup. Only two matches on Thursday, China versus South Africa and Australia versus Brazil. Now, China edged out South Africa 1-0 to earn their first win of the 2019 tournament. While falling short of a win, the South African team managed to give a more composed performance. Now, overall, they made fewer mistakes than their opening game, but one criticism from sports fans is that they were still defending deep in their own half. On the positive side, they did do a better job of moving the ball forward, although they never happened to find an empty net. South Africa is also the fourth team to lose back-to-back matches, the other teams being Nigeria in 1999, Equatorial Guinea in 2011, and the Ivory Coast in 2015. China aggressively attacked and was quick to respond when on the defense, while playing against the South Africans. And while they had many opportunities to score, most never panned out except for the one that did. And that was just enough to take home the win. Wang Shuang alone created 5 scoring chances during the match, and that's the most by any single Chinese player across the last 2 tournaments. And Li Ying, she was China's 23rd goal scorer, and only 4 other countries have had more, and that being Sweden, with 25 players to find the net, Norway with 29, the United States with 32, and Germany with a whopping 34 players who have scored. And in case you didn't know, China is also unbeaten in Women's World Cup action when they happen to score first. Now, it appeared as if the Chinese coach was also trying out new combinations of players against South Africa, perhaps strategically using his substitutions, looking ahead to the upcoming match against Spain on Monday. Now, as a result of China's win, France and 2-time champions Germany have progressed on to the round of 16. Now, turning to the Australia and Brazil match, it was the Aussies routing Brazil 3-2, and this was a thriller of a game, with Brazil leaping out to an early 2-0 lead. And the first goal was coming off of a penalty kick in the 27th minute. Brazil's Marta, who scored that penalty goal, also became the first player to score in 5 outings. But the ladies from down under surged back with 2 more goals at the 45th and 58th minutes. However, the game winner for the Matildas did not come from one of their own, but from Brazil's Monica. Now, a long pass was coming from midfield, directed towards Australian forward Kerr. Now, she happened to be offsides at the time and was actually pretty closely guarded by 2 Brazilian players. Now, as the ball was coming in, Monica headed the ball towards the goal and passed the Brazilian goalkeeper, Barbara. That gave Australia the win, and it's only the second time in Women's World Cup history that a team has come back to win from a 2-0 deficit. Teams in the Group C are taking a break and resume action on Tuesday, June 18th. Now, one other bit of World Cup news on the women's front. Former U.S. goalkeeper Hope Solo weighed in on the celebration following Tuesday's 13-0 USA blowout against Thailand. Speaking on CBS this morning, Solo said, quote, "I am a proponent of respecting my opponents, but I truly believe that we have to show so much class, especially coming from the number one team in the world. I think it was unnecessary to have planned out goal celebrations," end quote. And that is the controversy with the Americans celebrating after each goal. Now, Megan Rapinoe responded to critics on Fox News on the sports channel saying, quote, "I think our only crime was an explosion of joy. We've been pretty pent up, so if our crime is joy, then we'll take it." And as a whole, the U.S. women's soccer team is raring to go. Forward Carly Lloyd said that they wanted to build on the momentum after the win over Thailand.
Yeah, I would actually like to play tomorrow. I think all of us would. This window right now is 4 days in between. I remember last World Cup in between, I think it was the Colombia game, we had 5 days. So it's tough, you know, but But as you get deeper into the tournament, which we hope we do, you know, those days are going to come in handy for rest days.
Now, the U.S. is the most successful women's team in soccer. They have won 3 World Cups since the tournament began in 1991, 4 Olympic golds in the last 6 games, and have topped the FIFA rankings every year but 1 over the past 11. Now, before we leave Women's World Cup action for the week, here's a look at the upcoming matches. Now, today in Group D action, we have Japan against Scotland and England against Argentina, as well as in Group C, Jamaica and Italy are on the pitch. Saturday, we'll see Group E's, the Netherlands facing off against Cameroon, as well as Canada and New Zealand. And Sunday has Group F taking the center stage, so to speak, with Sweden versus Thailand and the U.S. up against Chile. We'll, of course, have those scores and more for you on Monday. Now, speaking of FIFA, FIFA presidential advisor Zvonimir Boban is returning to AC Milan as its chief football officer. FIFA says Boban, the deputy secretary general with responsibility for soccer issues, is leaving within days. Boban says that he will always be grateful to FIFA president Gianni Infantino for the opportunity that he was given. Now, Boban joins Milan at a low point for their 7-time European champion, which the elegant midfielder helped to win in the 1994 Champions League title. Milan finished 6th in Serie A this season, extending its failure to qualify for the Champions League to 6 years. UEFA is investigating also Milan's finances and has threatened the club with a 1-season ban from European competitions if it fails to meet targets by June 2021. Boban also helped Croatia reach the 1998 World Cup semifinals. I'm Steve Miller, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Now, in keeping with soccer, we also have this report on a soccer team facing unique challenges. The players of this Ugandan soccer team include former soldiers who lost limbs in battles and those who lost limbs due to sickness and accidents. But these soccer players don't want to be left behind. Magume Davis Rwakaringe has more.
Like in ordinary soccer, Kampala Amputees team used their clutches to run as the warm-up for the game at Midland Playground in Kawempe, a Kampala suburb. It is a cold Saturday afternoon, but the players start sweating after 10 minutes of these intensive warm-up exercises. The amputees are training hard for the forthcoming regional amputee soccer tournament that begins at the end of this June in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. One of the players here is Abel Tabule, who lost his limb when he was just 6 years in a bus accident. Tabule says life for a disabled person in Uganda is challenging.
I know this is kind of sad where people can look at you different. They think that you are nothing, you can't do anything. That kind of stigma you get traumatized. You feel like you are not fit to be in a society. Yeah, so that kind of life, you feel yourself, you're being isolated, yeah, and you don't much fit in society.
23-year-old John Asimwe, another amputee soccer player here, agrees. Asimwe, who is also a medical student, dreamt of playing professional soccer. His hopes were, however, ruined when he lost his limb through a football injury 8 years ago. He's glad amputee soccer is giving him a second chance.
When you're there, not playing football, you find when you suffer, you're sad due to amputation. When you see people who are playing with football, when they are off, you say, also maybe I could have been like that. But when I come to the pitch and I play football, I feel when I'm happy and okay. Because also my intention was to represent Uganda as a national team on cranes. So I did not make it due to amputation, but now I'll be happy when I make it in such a way.
Amputee soccer is a disabled sport played with 7 players on each team. Outfield players have lower extremity amputations, while the goalkeeper must have an upper extremity amputation. Players are prohibited from using their residential limbs to voluntarily advance, control, or block the ball.
Before you get amputated, we're using the right leg. When the ball comes on the right or maybe on the left, you feel like kicking it with the right hand not there. So that's the challenge you get. You can leave the ball. You find sometimes when you put the crutches instead of putting the leg.
Lolens Timbo is the president of Amputee Soccer Federation in Uganda.
When you find us playing on the pitch, you don't differentiate our football from the other. I don't call it normal, but the usual football. The football people are used to. So because the intensity we use, the speed, we use the same basics, we juggle, we dribble, we score, even we celebrate after every score. It's like when you lose a limb, you may think maybe you've lost everything. It's like we had lost hope, and then amputee football came in as a substitute to restore our hope. It's like we call ourselves bowlers.
Chitimbo says despite challenges like a lack of funding, the sport is growing. He says there are so far 10 amputee soccer clubs in the country. For the Sony Side of Sports, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinjini, Kampala, Uganda.
And with a closer look at African sports, I'm also going to pass the mic off to Samson Omale.
Away from the Women's World Cup, Nigeria's Enyimba International Football Club claimed a record 8th title in emphatic manner as they were crowned champions of the abridged 2018-2019 Nigeria Professional Football League season. Enyimba won 4 of their 5 matches during the championship playoffs, losing only to Kano Pillars 2-0 to gather a total of 12 points. They will now play in the CAF Champions League next season. Coach Usman Abdallah is one of Nigeria's most successful football club.
This year the aim is to win the league, at the same time get back to the continent. Those are the two goals we set for the year, and we did it. We are happy to achieve those two things.
With the 2019 AFCON just a few days away, Algeria coach Djamel Belmadi has confirmed that Haris Belkebla has been dropped from the Algeria African Cup of Nations squad. Belmadi explained that it was in order to maintain discipline in the squad ahead of the finals in Egypt, which begin on the 21st of June. His omission follows video footage of Belkebla appearing on there exposing his backside on a live stream of an online game. In athletics news, female Olympic and world 800 meters champion Caster Semenya has been denied participation in her favored 800 meters race in Morocco, the athlete said on Thursday.
I can run any events I want. It can be 100 meters, it can be 200, it can be long jump, it can be heptathlon, you name it. You know, I'm a talented athlete, so I'm not worried about anything else. Even if I have to withdraw from 800 meters, it don't matter no more. I think I've won anything I've ever wanted.
This is despite Switzerland's highest court rejecting an IAAF request for eligibility regulations to be reimposed on the athlete. And that's it. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you.
Thank you so much, Samson. And I'm Steve Miller in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
They're playing back.
The National Basketball Association has a new champion. Aesthetic fans gathered at Jurassic Park after the Toronto Raptors' first NBA championship win last night. When the final buzzer sounded, jubilant Raptors fans flooded the streets of downtown Toronto for a night of celebration not seen in the city since Major League Baseball's Toronto Blue Jays won a World Series title in 1993. With a nation hanging on every shot, Canada's only NBA team put the finishing touches on a remarkable 4-2 series upset that denied the Golden State Warriors a fourth championship in 5 years. The Toronto Raptors delivered Canada its first NBA title with a 114-110 victory over the two-time defending champion Golden State Warriors. Reuters' Rory Carroll was courtside in California for the big win.
As you can hear from the Raptors fans who have crowded into Oracle Arena tonight, this is a very big deal for the Toronto fan base that has not celebrated a championship ever before. They did it behind one superstar, Kawhi Leonard, and then a team full of role players who were able to fit in perfectly, a well-orchestrated team and well-coached by Nick Nurse. Momentum in this game shifted firmly in the Raptors' direction when Warriors guard Klay Thompson succumbed to a knee injury in the third quarter. He had 30 points up to that point, but was unable to continue. From there, the Raptors just continued playing the methodical kind of basketball they've been playing all series long, moving the ball, hitting big shots, and dominating the boards with their big men down low.
That was a big thanks to Reuters reporter Rory Carroll for that coverage. We also heard Rory mention that Warriors guard Klay Thompson suffered a torn anterior cruciate ligament, or ACL, during the game. Thompson was attempting to score a fast break layup in the third quarter when he was fouled from behind. Now, the 29-year-old landed awkwardly and fell to the court, grabbing his left knee. Thompson was a key part of the team's championships in 2015, 2017, and 2018, was the hottest player on the court Thursday before the injury. He had to be helped off, but returned moments later to loud applause to shoot two free throws. Thompson then exited the game for good and was later seen on crutches. It is unclear how severe the tear is, but it could keep Thompson off the court for all of next season. Now, Thompson's injury came one game after his teammate Kevin Durant suffered an Achilles tear, and that injury is expected to keep him sidelined for all of next season. Kawhi Leonard, Toronto's forward, was named MVP of the finals. He averaged 28.5 points throughout the series. And after the win, he reflected on his trade from San Antonio late last July.
You know, just be able to win this championship this year is just something special for me. Because you know how the last year everybody was looking at me. And I stayed true to myself. And I had a great support system. And once I got here to Toronto, they understood everything, and the move kept moving from there.
Leonard becomes a free agent in a few weeks and can sign elsewhere, but his impact on the Canadian team helped them overcome the talented Warriors. Golden State's Steph Curry says that they are ready to reload and return to the NBA Finals.
Next season will be next season, and we'll come back with the right mentality. So, it's kind of hard to talk about because it's a tough way to go out. And it's tough to lose in the finals. But story's not over yet.
Now, after the win, Raptors coach Nick Nurse says his players did not fade physically during the postseason.
It was a great group, though. They really played together. I thought they really fought hard. They were tough-minded. They didn't seem like this was wearing on them at all. 2 months of playoff basketball, they never seemed tired to me.
Warriors forward Draymond Green says they tried their best to win a third straight championship.
Everything this team has been through, I'm extremely proud of the guys. You know, the way we fought, you know, it was great. But, you know, we lost. There's no moral victories. You know, congratulations to Toronto. They played a great series. And, they deserve to win.
Now, this victory, the Raptors may take Canada beyond ice hockey as their defining sport, but the Raptors just aren't a Canadian team. Serge Ibaka was born in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Pascal Siakam in Cameroon, Mark Gasol in Spain, and OG Anunoby in London to Nigerian parents. But it goes beyond that with team president Masai Ujiri. He was born in London to a Nigerian father and a Kenyan mother. He grew up in Nigeria before moving to the U.S. Now, we're going to open the door to the VOA game room, and my colleague Jim Stevenson is ready with a wrap of just some of the sports that have been taking place around the globe.
Thailand won the Golf Sixes tournament in Oitavas Dunes, Portugal.
I'm lucky today, you know, we play the great round. I mean, you know, we just midfield hole today, but I think it's... The teamwork very important for this format, you know. I mean, you know, good crowd. Hopefully next year going to be more crowd. It's going to be good. I mean, the organizer is very good, fantastic.
Tongchai Jaidi, along with Pachara Kongwatmai, topped the English duo of Tom Lewis and Paul Waring. Lewis says they just didn't match their Thai opponents in the alternate shot format over six holes.
Yeah, I think I felt good. I think Paul felt confident as well. I just think we got a little bit unlucky on that first hole today, and it sort of just killed the momentum a little bit. And, you know, we did well, like I say. It just didn't happen for us at the end there.
Tongchai Jaidi didn't mind playing all the way to the sixth hole for three times on the final day.
This kind of format, you know, you like an alternate, you know, you have to pick the tee shot, and then you can play your thing. I think it's not easy to make a lot of birdie, you know. I mean, this from only six holes. I think that we come to six, hole number six is fantastic, you know. Good setup. I think it's a good view. You can see all the ocean. You can see behind the hotel. And think setup is fantastic.
Lewis hopes to return, as does Jai D.
It's still been nice to have a week off that we wouldn't have been playing, and to do something like this is really good to represent our country. It's a proud moment.
Go for Thailand. Thank you very much.
Back home, you know, they talk about superheroes without capes, and he's a superhero without cape. That's the way we see him.
Alex Cora, Boston Red Sox manager, on David Ortiz, one of the most beloved figures in sports history in both his native Dominican Republic and in Boston, where he played most of his 20 Major League Baseball seasons. He is in stable condition after being shot once in the torso in what appeared to be a targeted attack at a Santo Domingo nightclub.
He's bigger than life, you know, David, like... That vibe he brought in on a daily basis to those teams, and what he brings anytime I see him, you know, that smile. He give you a hug, a big smile. He does it with everybody.
Ortiz, known as Big Poppy, led the Red Sox to 3 World Series championships and was a 10-time All-Star while hitting 541 home runs. Well wishes came from former teammates, like pitcher David Price.
The way that he treated everybody, you know, he might not know your first name, but he's gonna act like you've been best friends for a very long time. So, you know, we all have a ton of respect and a ton of love for Big Poppy, and we're all wishing him and his family well.
And thoughts from fierce rivals on the field, but friends off, like former New York Yankee star Derek Jeter.
Everyone knows what he was able to do on the field, but, you know, the type of person he was off of the field. Just getting to know him over the years and what he's meant to the community, not only in Boston, but in the Dominican. You know, this is a guy that's beloved throughout the sport and throughout sports in general. We just wish him a speedy recovery, but it was complete and utter shock.
The Red Sox sent an air ambulance to transport the 43-year-old Ortiz to Boston to continue his recovery.
Now, thanks to Jim Stevenson, my VOA colleague, for filing that. And in another update to the David Ortiz shooting case, the suspect may be tied to other crimes in the United States. I'm Steve Miller, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Now we're going to take a trip over to the left coast and the links of Pebble Beach for day 2 of the U.S. Open, which is currently underway. And joining me in the studio is VOA intern and Brown Daily Herald sports writer Ryan Handel. Ryan, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Now, can you give us a quick recap of the first round of play?
Sure. Holding the outright lead after the first round at 6 under par was former world number one Justin Rose. Rose won the U.S. Open in 2013, and he has set himself up well to go for a second title. There was a 4-way tie at 5 under that included Mercurial American Ricky Fowler and South African Louis Oosthuizen. Rory McIlroy and Brooks Koepka remained within striking distance at 3-under and 2-under, respectively. As the second round gets underway, those players will see if they can keep it up.
And I think Fowler is actually doing well, moving up in the rankings already. But if we take a look at the favorites, who had a rough opening round?
Definitely up-and-coming American Tony Finau. He finished in the top 10 in 4 of his last 5 majors, but he's going to have a tough time repeating that feat. He found himself at 3-over after an underwhelming Thursday. Also, Phil Mickelson, who was perceived as a major threat to win the U.S. Open, finished 7 back of the lead at 1-over. And they'll need solid second rounds just to make the cut.
Now, of course, Tiger Woods is back on the scenes. He's coming off of a huge, huge win. How did he fare?
Tiger entered the clubhouse at 1-under after an uneventful first round overall. However, we all know how dangerous the 15-time major champion is, and I expect him to work his way into the championship hunt by Sunday.
Oh, man, that is incredible. You know, what should our listeners look to as we head on to day 2 and the weekend?
Well, excellent weather is expected at Pebble Beach Golf Links for the second straight day, which should set up the golfers well for another low-scoring round. But the tournament organizers might adjust the pin locations to make things more difficult. Today, Justin Rose, Tiger Woods, and Brooks Koepka are already on the course, while Ricky Fowler, Louis Oosthuizen, and Rory McIlroy will tee off later, meaning that there will be gripping action all day at Pebble Beach.
Ryan Handel is a sports writer for Brown University's Brown Daily Herald, as well as an intern here at VOA. Thank you so much for that insight.
Thanks, Steve.
And that wraps up the June 14th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. On behalf of our brilliant producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, the incredible Nick Ivanov, thank you so much for joining us on this fantastic Friday. Hope everyone has a great weekend. And until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
This is Science in a Minute.
A few years ago, a trio of physicists won Nobel Prizes for their work that shows the universe is expanding at a rapid rate. New research led by Adam Riess, one of the three Nobel laureates at Johns Hopkins University, has confirmed that the universe is not only rapidly expanding, but is doing so at a rate 9% faster than expected. Riess's researchers say that they use new measurements taken by NASA's Hubble Space Telescope and base the jump in speed of the expansion on a trajectory that was seen shortly after the Big Bang, nearly 14 billion years ago. The way scientists usually take their star measurements takes a lot of time. But using a new measurement method called DASH, the researchers were able to use the Hubble as you would with a point-and-shoot camera that many of us use today. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, thousands of men, women, and children are forced to flee to escape violence and persecution. June 20th marks World Refugee Day. Global refugee awareness on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Thanks for listening to Border Crossings with Larry London.
We're honoring Avicii, one of EDM's greatest producers, who tragically passed away last year, with a month-long giveaway of his new album, Tim.
The album includes vocals from many prominent artists, including Chris Martin and more. Tune in at 1500 Universal every weekday in June for your chance to win a free copy of Tim. Anyone who makes a request has a chance to win.
Border Crossings!
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts. Every hour, on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA News. I'm Liz.